Hello, America, and all of our listeners all over the world. You're listening to an extremely laggy episode of Let's Begin. Currently, we are in the middle of some weather down here in Georgia, so if I sound fadey or staticky or whatever, that's the reason why. But we're just going to power through and deal with it, right?
Yep.
All right.
Might be our last chance to give you a relatively down-to-earth show before the E3 craziness begins.
Yeah.
For sure. Oh, fuck me. You know what? We might just take Friday off next week.
I think we will, because I will have done 4 shows by that time.
Yeah.
So.
All right. But yeah, so this is going to be pretty much the last show before E3. We will have plenty of content for you on Smashpad for all your E3 goodness. But our regular shows may or may not be postponed or cut entirely, because by that point, we are all going to be just straight exhausted.
Yeah, we'll be doing streams for most of the press conferences.
Yeah.
And which will be fun.
We will be doing a regular show on Sunday, because there's enough stuff that did come out. So,
including essentially, a bit of news that just broke.
Yeah, so we'll
talk about that.
I figured you'd appreciate that, Brandon.
Oh, I know. I already saw it.
Oh, well.
But yeah, well, it looks good. But anyway, so this week, what happened? President Trump went over to the UK. That didn't go well.
You think?
Also, effective today, we don't have it listed. I might as well go ahead and say it today. Theresa May officially stepped down as prime minister.
Yeah.
She will probably go down in history as probably the second most hated prime minister after Margaret Thatcher.
Hmm.
Which, let's be honest, you know, some of her predecessors were definitely already in the running, including Tony Blair.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I think
she was more like kind of vanilla ice cream in a white bowl, just plain.
Yeah. But yeah, so, you know who they're saying is probably going to end up replacing her?
Boris Johnson.
Boris goddamn Johnson, a.k.a. the Donald Trump of London. Oh, God. That's going to be just a shit show. But at least we'll be able to laugh at the Brits a little bit. But anyway, all right. So other than that, we got some other stuff. For example, the governor of North Carolina managed to block during the stream of abortion bills that have been coming out. The governor of North Carolina, who is a Democrat, blocked. He actually vetoed the GOP abortion bill. We'll tell you what went down with that. It actually has a good ending. Also, if you're a fan of Nutella, you might want to start, you know, packing it in soon because, well, we'll tell you.
That's ominous.
Yeah. Also, we got some sports news. We got some YouTube news because we kind of went through just like one after the other. It's like it's not been a good week for YouTube, frankly. They have shown that they kind of, at some point, it looks like they have no backbone. Then it looked like they do have backbone. Now they might have half a backbone.
They're keeping us on our toes.
Yeah. And then, of course, we got our regular entertainment portion, including a new project coming from Netflix, from something we all were at one time or another, you know, interested in or involved in when we were younger, or at least in Pat's cases in recent years as well. But anyway, before we get to all that, as usual, we have to talk about what we did this week. So, Bill, start us off. What were you up to this week?
So I'm still watching The Expanse, like midway through season 3 now. So I'm hoping I'll be able to finish that up this weekend and, you know, get ready for season 4 that has been announced, but not actually dated yet, but will probably be soon. Yeah, because it's Amazon, so who knows. But yeah, that season's really good. And goddamn, Jules Pierre Mao is an asshole. So I've been enjoying that. Let's see, what else have I been up to? Well, I got my Mortal Kombat 11 review submitted and published, so that's up there now.
Yeah.
All right. If it wasn't, it would be better if it wasn't buried in just bullshit.
Yeah.
So there's that. And apart from that, well, I got a little tired of my CPU running at 95 degrees Celsius, so I changed the CPU fan, so that was nice. And dropped the temperature by 30 degrees. Which
nice.
I think is a pretty significant change under load, so I'm kind of happy about that. And given that it's summertime soon here, it's going to be helpful. So,
How hot does it usually get in Quebec during the summer?
Usually it hangs around the 70s and 80s, but there are days where it can get up to like the high 90s. So it's nothing like that you're not used to, but it's pretty
I
unusual
was
for say, us.
Pussies.
Yeah. So that's kind of been pretty much it for me. How about you, Pat?
I've just been prepping up for E3 at this point. My vacation has begun as of 2 hours ago, and you know this is kind of the calm before the storm. So. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, technically
like a promising
we could watch
year.
The EA stream, but it's EA, and who cares?
I mean, I will, but I already know that I'm not their audience.
Yeah. So,
unless Rammer's there.
Yeah, they kind of already confirmed that I'm going to do anything like that. So.
Yeah.
All right, in that case, Chris.
Yeah, I watched some Netflix stuff, Always Be My Maybe, which is the new, rom-com they had with Ali Wong and Randall Park as the two leads, and it was pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty successful movie, and has a great cameo by Keanu Reeves in it as, playing her... kind of initial love interest before the two leads kind of get together. He plays himself. Very much kind of just a weird, nice guy that, I don't know, it's a very weird whole set of scenes. Definitely people should check it out. And it was a fun movie. I also watched When They See Us, which is the sort of a series that Ava DuVernay made about the Central Park Five. That is really well done. Kind of just leaves you through each episode just being furious at the people at the NYPD that just rammed this whole thing through and screwed these five young men and their families over and ruined their lives.
Yeah. The only consolation is that you do know how it ends, and it actually does have a happy ending, relatively speaking. But
yeah, the weird thing is you kind of just see this and know that, if the police weren't, basically trying to screw these kids over every step of the way, justice could have been done back then. I had them serving, I think it said 6 to 14 years they served generally.
Yeah. Remember, these were like teenagers.
Yeah, I think a 14-year-old, a couple 15s, and a 16-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's very much an infuriating thing to watch, which then, and you find out near the end that the... I forget what her Linda Fairstein was one of the people sort of at the head of this whole thing. She ended up becoming a writer of sexual crime novels. Conveniently. And you find out that in real life, after this whole thing came down, her book publisher dropped her. Because people came to this realization that she's one of the linchpins at the center of this whole thing. Now she's acting like she's the victim of a mob, and it's like, no, you fucking ruined these people's lives.
Like, yeah.
Be glad.
Again, the youngest of this group was 14. You basically robbed these kids of, you know, being able to enjoy their teenage years and, you know, going off to college and, you know, growing up, getting family. A job, starting families. Yeah.
Yeah, and they do a good thing at the end, like showing like the actual real life versions of each of the characters that are in it and sort of what they have done since then and all that.
Yeah.
Like three of them moved to Georgia, which is pretty weird coincidence. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this it has a nice ending. Obviously, they do like fillet Trump for a good bit for releasing that.
I mean, they have to because he's central to the whole story.
Yeah, and he also has like the big interview talking about how if he wishes if he could start over, he would be want to be a highly educated black, not a black man or whatever. He just says black.
Oh, yeah.
Which the character's like, what's a black sort of thing. But yeah, it's like four episodes, about 45 minutes each, so it's not too long, about 3 hours total. Mm-hmm. I'll have to go through it, but yeah, it's definitely something that makes you hope that all of the officers and their higher-ups that were involved in this, you know, they deserve 10 times the sentence they gave these kids and special seats in hell for everything they did.
Oh, yeah.
Especially when you see, like, who the ultimate culprit is and sort of how he just kind of gets away scot-free because they're fixating so much on these black kids and Latino kids that just also happen to be there later.
Did they eventually catch the guy who did it, or at least identify him?
He had a string of other rapes and murders after, later that summer, that he got caught for, then admitted to it several years later, I think. Because I think in the show, they juxtapose it with, like, the one kid is in, like, his third prison. He's asked for transfers a couple times, trying to get closer to his mom so she could visit him more often. And they juxtapose it with, like, him in a third one when 9/11 happens. And the guy he meets there is the one that confesses to it. And he had basically gone to prison for life for killing his girlfriend, who was pregnant with this kid, and basically by sticking a knife in both of her eyes while their kids were in the house. You know, real upstanding individual.
Yeah.
Yeah, so basically, like, the notion that if they had caught this guy after this rape had happened to the jogger woman, they could have prevented those.
Yeah.
Instead, they decided to be racist and go after all these black kids.
Shocking.
And one of them wasn't even on the list of people to investigate. He went to the police station with his friend as support and ended up going to prison because they decided to pin him on it to round out their crew.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's just some fucked up shit.
Mm-hmm.
And after watching that, I needed to get something nice to watch, so I watched some more Tuca and Birdie.
Yeah.
Which is just a fun, ridiculous, horny show.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think I just watched the episode where Tuca gets surgery.
Yep.
Which is great. It's still a very good show.
Yeah.
And it definitely doesn't overstay its welcome. Because I think I have two or three more episodes to watch. And it's about like 10 episodes for the whole season, 10 or 11.
Yep.
So it's a pretty light show. A nice way to bounce back from when they see us.
Yeah. And, I mean, don't get me wrong. You can still tell that this is made by one of the people behind BoJack because it does have its modeling parts later on in the series. But
yeah, it's but it is a very nice, mostly positive show.
Mm-hmm.
About Tuca and Birdie kind of having their eccentricities and kind of mental issues to work through.
Yep.
But yeah, that was as like the Netflixing I've been doing. I've been doing some streaming this week. Sunday we played Void Bastards, which is a fun roguelike with a really nice comic art style to it. And I did not do well in that stream. played about an hour of it. And yeah, it's a very cool game. I just need to, I think it has difficulty settings, so I need to turn it down. Because the way I have it now, I essentially have to play like a stealth game. Which the first couple runs I had, I was not getting any bullets or supplies for my guns, so I just kept running out and being like, "All right, well, I'm just tossing mines this whole ship because I don't have anything else I can do," sort of thing, which was neat, but also kind of like, Jesus Christ, you guys are punishing me every single step of the way. I get one cool thing, and then I run out of ammo for it, and I can't do it anymore. Sort of thing, where it's like, all right, you guys got to give me something here. That just keeps screwing me over and over and over again. But yeah, I think I'm going to try out the difficulty stuff and see if that makes it a little bit easier to get into. But yeah, the other one was Outer Wilds, which I mentioned before is like a really cool kind of space exploration adventure game. And yeah, I'm really into that game. It's a hell of a lot of fun. It has like a time loop mechanic to it, which I started figuring out more bits of that because I was just exploring this one planet and then just some weird thing would happen and I'd be dead. I just had no idea what it was. Once I figured out sort of what it was, like, oh, okay, that makes more sense because there's like you find out a comet is in this solar system. And that is sort of the ultimate end of at least the one planet, if you're on that planet. I assume there's other stuff that happens, but yeah. So like every time you restart a life there, you are looking up at this planet, that same planet, and notice this like explosion on this spaceship that's above it, orbiting around it. And so I kind of went like, hey, I've been seeing some story quest lines that, around this ship, so let me go up there and figure out what's going on. Which took me a bit to kind of get the physics under control because you kind of have to match velocity with the specific ship or else you're just going to have a hard time trying to get to the landing spots for it. And so I managed to do that, and I go through it, and it's 0G because it's in space, and trying to have to go explore these other areas. That was pretty cool. Especially one that was kind of gravity flipping sort of thing. But yeah, it's kind of just unraveling this whole line of stories that interweave between all these different planets and the people on them and all that tied to this whole ancient civilization that existed long before yours that ties into all this. That it's just a really fun story and a really kind of inventive game that definitely seems like if I can put more time into it and maybe even eventually beat it, it might very well be one of my top 10 games, which is kind of surprising, kind of just seeing it as like this weird 100 meg install that I had on my Xbox One for the last year. That somehow actually turned out into a very good game. But yeah, that was fun for that whole stream. Tuesday, I played Sonic Mania since that's on PlayStation Plus. I had not checked it out before, and
oh, wow.
There's some really cool parts of that game. There's some that kind of suck. The boss fight with the missile launcher I thought was really bad. Because the jump physics are completely different than anything else in the game. So I died a bunch. That's the only place where I died on a boss fight.
Have we mentioned Christian Whitehead as an asshole?
Yeah. Because I would try to jump over the missiles, and it would not let me get over them. It would just keep pushing Sonic back so I could not get any like forward momentum over them randomly. It just never made sense, but eventually I did get to beat it. And yeah, I think my favorite parts of that is when it's doing like the Sonic racing bits, which I just really like that style. It's a style of game that just needs to be explored more in games. That kind of PS1, Saturn, and 64 level of graphics 3D graphics is something that's underutilized right now. Hmm. That I think, because that part of it just looks real sharp. And it's really fun in a way, because it's kind of like a, you know, Sonic being like a Mario Kart cart, but you're just kind of going around this track trying to catch this UFO. And yeah, the way you have to collect the blue balls to build up his speed is really cool. And yeah, then I get to some of the other like bonus stages that I have no idea how I get to. The ones that you're on like a sphere trying to collect all the blue balls there, which I never actually do complete. But when I get to the Sonic Racing ones, I always do get those. But yeah, I kind of wish that game had a save state option in there. So you could be like, all right, I've been playing this for an hour. I need to save this and go, not just quit out and lose whatever progress you might have. So I think I had to just keep playing until I just died a bunch, which happened with the water boss fight with Robotnik, where he's scuba diving under the water, dropping bombs. It took me a while to figure that out, what that was going on. But yeah, that game's pretty good. There are definitely some parts that are just frustrating, but I think overall it's probably one of the best Sonic games.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I think it's just more cohesive than even some of the early ones, where they had a lot of stages like, oh, these are ones that go really fast and they work well together, and you know, you kind of just get into a good rhythm with them. And then there's some that are just really slow, just kind of clashes with the style of the game in a weird way. And this kind of flows a bit better, I think. But the stream was fun because I just stunk it up the whole way. I think I finished most of the stages with like one or two rings. I usually fucked it up at the bosses. Which happens, but yeah, that's a fun game. On Thursday, I streamed some Time Spinner, which was really fun to kind of get back into that. I kind of just started from scratch, and I think I got further than I had before.
Mm-hmm.
So that is a kickstarted Metroid-like, which is probably more like a Symphony of the Night in its style.
You never have too many of those.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The menus are very much Symphony of the Night. And you are a time messenger, I think that's what they call them. You're kind of going back through time to right wrongs, which in this year, the evil empire kind of invades your village and tries to take control of the time spinner as your mom is sending you through time. And ends up destroying it, but sends the pieces through time with you. And so you kind of use it, try to put it back together, which then you send yourself back in time like 1,000 years. So that's kind of where I'm at, trying to explore around, you know, do some quests for people. It's definitely not as contained as Symphony of the Night is, where it's just one map. It kind of spreads it out a bit, which is pretty neat.
So it's a little more Order of Ecclesia.
Yeah, you go to points where you're like crossing bridges between these like more open areas that kind of let you have more of a horizontal map versus just one big space that is interconnected. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I got a familiar, a little dragon dude that I'm trying to get leveled up so he can start kicking some ass.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, now that he just introduced the ability for like loadouts. So I can have different orbs. Orbs, you have like a special attack, which you hold down circle for that. And there's like even you have like these other orbs that orbit you and are kind of like a last defense kind of thing. Usually if I get too close to enemies, they'll put some damage on them as they get too close. To me, so it kind of works out pretty well. And so I have one that's all my fire special attack and my fire orbs. They go together pretty well. I think I have three of them. So I have one that's just the base ones of that stuff, and another one that's these like swords that are slower but have a bigger arc of damage and all that. Yeah, that game's pretty cool. I think I'm liking it more than Chasm, because Chasm just takes too long for you to get to a point where the platforming feels good. They kind of dole out the things like ledge grabs and double jumps, wall jumps, that sort of stuff, way too late. It's a little bit too much of a grind for that. And here you have at least the ledge grab right up front. And so you can kind of explore, but you also have the ability to stop time, so you can use enemies as ledges in that sense, which lets you get around to places pretty well if you can time it up right. But yeah, that game's pretty cool. It's out on Switch and Xbox One now. Came out on PC and PS4 last year. I definitely recommend people checking that out whenever they can check it out. And also been doing some E3 stream prep. Phil was on for a few minutes at the just before I started the stream, just to double check that we can do Skype through that and it should work. And it does.
Are we going to do that whole thing with the HUD?
I don't know. Somebody has to come up with something for that.
Yeah, I suck at graphics, so I can't really do that.
Yeah, I think what we're going to end up doing is just having me set up the browser as the source for the video.
Yeah.
We'll just stream that through our Twitch channel.
Yeah.
And have us as audio over it.
Mm-hmm.
So we can just kind of talk about what's going on, discuss things, have a little bit of a pre-show and after-show kind of going over what happened, all that.
Yeah.
Then we can sort of go in more depth on whatever podcast we do next week.
Okay. Then you can just throw the whole thing onto YouTube afterwards.
Yeah, we'll archive that. I assume we'll do up a nice page on smashpad.com with easy access to the streams.
Yep.
And put the archives up on there for people to check out.
I don't know if Dan Rib's kind of our go-to graphics guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if we're going to have any sort of like audio version. I don't know if you would want to do that, Phil. It might just be too uneventful as a podcast to listen to.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of us just...
Unless somebody just wants to have commentary to watch over it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well then, I guess it's my turn.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay. So, first things first, still playing Dragon Quest XI. I'm pretty confident now that I actually am getting towards the end of that game now.
Yeah.
Instead of, thinking I was and then suddenly deciding to blow up the world. Although the game does kind of unceremoniously kill off one of the party members, for reasons I still don't entirely understand. Like, they give, a reason plot-wise why she had to die, but it kind of happens kind of unceremoniously and without any, pomp or circumstance. It just, she dies. You find her lying dead in the middle of the forest, and then you have to use the main character's precognition abilities on her staff to find out why she died. And that's literally the last time I've heard her speak. But otherwise, something funny I noticed is the now that we're towards the last quarter of the game, they're giving some minor one of those. It's like one of those an old JRPGs where suddenly the whole world is opened up to you, and now you have to go to all the various places you've gone to previously to get a MacGuffin. To get pieces of a MacGuffin so you can put them all together to make the great MacGuffin that you will then use to fight the end. Yeah. But what's neat is the characters that they show in these previous blasts from the past. They're all basically XBs of the original party from Dragon Quest III.
Hmm.
Literally, their character design, everything is meant to invoke, the original quartet from Dragon Quest III. It's actually pretty neat, and I thought it was a nice call back. Other than that, I'm still playing Ace Attorney. Oh, yeah, before I forget. So you know how, like, in a lot of these old JRPGs, when it's like a world-spanning thing, if you're given, like, any kind of vehicle or something, you might be given, like, a ship or a boat of some kind. And then finally, towards the end, you'll be given something that'll let you, like, fly. Well, you know, like in Dragon Quest games in the past, when you got to fly, it was usually something like a hot air balloon.
Yeah.
You know, something like that. And, you know, they
something
talk...
really limited.
Yeah, and they talk about, in this game, it's like, okay, you know, eventually, you know, you're going to need some kind of flying contraption because you need to get up to, you know, the Island of Fear, which is where the baddie is located. And they keep saying, you know, back in the old days, the legendary hero used some kind of flying thing to get up there and defeat the Dark Lord. And you keep thinking, okay, so what is it going to be? Is it going to be a balloon? Is it going to be a glider of some kind? Is it going to be, you know, maybe a cloud? I mean, we got Toriyama involved in this. Why wouldn't it be a cloud, you know? It's a goddamn flying whale.
Because of course it is.
And they present it in just the goofiest goddamn way possible. Because, so like, the hero gets a hold of this relic that's like a magic flute, right? And you think, okay, so you gotta play the magic flute, and, you know, the music will call, you know, Cetacea. That's what the thing is called, Cetacea. You know, as in cetacean.
Mm-hmm.
You know, an aquatic mammal. You get it? It's fantastic, as all Dragon Quest shit is. And then, so originally the hero doesn't try it, use the flute. Another party member who's like the sage of the party that has like all the white magic spells, she uses the flute first because that's kind of like her specialty. Doesn't work. So then they hand it to the hero, who of course is the luminary. And then the flute turns into a giant fishing rod, and you literally fish the goddamn flying whale out of the goddamn sea of clouds.
Okay.
I wonder where they got that idea.
Japan.
Oh, yeah.
There's something out of Heaven's Ward that they may have directly bitten off there.
Actually, I think it's from Dragon Ball.
Probably.
Speaking of which...
I'm thinking about is actually called the Sea of Clouds, too.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, there's actually a place in this game called the Last Bastion, which is like this flying island up in the sky that you only get to access after you get a hold of Cetacea. And this thing looks like the fucking, you know, the freaking, the damn island in the sky from Dragon Ball. You know, like I was expecting Mr. Popo to come out.
What are you doing here?
Yeah, exactly. There is no Mr. Popo, but he sure as hell looks a lot like him. But yeah, other than that, reading as usual. I finished Wastetide, which is the book by Chen Kufan that I've been talking about recently. I highly recommend that book, and I hope it gets nominated for some awards at the Hugos and the Nebulas soon, because damn, it is good. But basically, it's sort of like taking the concept of... I mentioned a while back, I mentioned Trash Island, which is that big patch of plastic and shit that's like floating around in the middle of like the Atlantic Ocean. Yeah, the Pacific.
Patch.
Yeah. Actually, the concept for Silicon Isle in this book is based on an actual place off the coast of the People's Republic of China. Yeah. It's called Silicon Isle because of all like the island parts of the country that specifically specialize in like recycling old electronics and stuff. It's the one that does the most of it. Yeah. And basically, Chen Kufan took the concept and expanded it into like a sort of near future cyberpunkish world where it's literally polluted the entire island, and so all the people there have to be given like these government requisitions, cybernetic parts. And like a lot of them are like deformed and stuff like that. It's just, it's really good. It's really goddamn good. Mm. What else? Oh yeah. So this has been a exciting week, and I don't necessarily mean that in a good way. Mm. God, where do we start? Okay. So technically this starts last week around Thursday. So you guys know Coconut, my cockatoo.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So he lives, we call it his cage, but it's not really a cage. It's a, sort of like a shower pod or like a shower set that my dad sort of reinvented into be like a, almost like a zoo quality type of place where he's got like places he can climb on and he's got toys and his food and water and stuff like that. And he's got lots of space. Mm-hmm. Like all shower pods, of course, it's got, you know, the door that you got to use to open and close it. Well, Thursday, the door came unfastened. So it meant, you know, every time we were going to have – now, of course, that's just a minor annoyance. But it meant that every time we had to open and close the door, it meant we had to basically reset it, you know, reset it back onto so it's aligned and everything to close it. And my dad, you know, my dad's like, oh, we'll have to wait. We'll fix it, but we'll do it later. I'm like, okay, fine. Whatever. Remember this because it's going to come back. Okay? So then second, on Tuesday, my dad broke his ankle. And he did it in the stupidest goddamn way possible. So my dad, of course, you know, he has his workshop out in the backyard, right? And he was on a 11-foot ladder. Now, Patrick, you worked at Walmart, so
I've been a safety lead at Walmart. I'm already getting stressed.
Yeah. So, what are the two big things you're not supposed to do when you're on a ladder?
Well, there's more than two, but using a broken ladder is a big one. Breaking a 3-point stance is a big one. Mm-hmm. 3 points of contact, both of your legs. And one hand, and absolutely do not try to climb from the ladder onto an adjacent or not so adjacent platform.
Exactly. Okay. So just about. You forgot the last big one, which is you do not try to shift it across the floor when you're on it.
What the actual crucifix? See, that's so stupid that it didn't even make it into our realm of possibilities. What? Wow. Oh, my God.
My shift across, I mean, just like, you know, just kind of going, trying to slowly make it, you know, shift over to like another part.
No, just no.
Yeah, so I actually did that when I was at Walmart, and I know it's a big no-no, but it's also, you know, fucking Walmart. And
oh, my God.
Yeah, see, here's the thing. Unlike
if I've ever gone into the back room and seen something like that taking place.
Yeah, so here's the thing. At Walmart, I was on a smooth, flat surface. We live on an incline.
Oh, shit. This just keeps getting worse.
So he fell off the 11-foot ladder and shattered his left ankle. Now he is on crutches. And being my dad, he has basically milked it for all it's fucking worth. You know, my mom, well, let me put it this way. My mom has never thought of divorce, but I'm pretty sure she's thought of murder. All right. Let's see. So that's number two. Fuck. Let's see what else happened. I broke my ankle. Oh, yeah, my school stuff. For those who don't know, I've only got 20 more days to finish the program. So that's not exactly massive, but, you know, like a massive deal. But it is a bit of a small stress inducer. Fortunately, we do have the money to get a 3-month extension if we absolutely have to do it. But I would rather we not do that. Have to do that, right?
Right.
And now, finally, last night. So you remember what I said at the beginning of the story about the door on my Coconut's cage?
Yes.
Okay, so you remember how I told you it had come like unhinged and off-center and everything and how we had to constantly reset it?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Well, what I did not notice is that the frame of the door was kind of, I want to say, bowing a little bit. And are you guys familiar with tempered glass?
Uh-huh.
You know what happens to tempered glass?
Yeah, when it gets under stress, yes.
Yeah. It's too shattered. Oh, a wild guess what happened to me about 11 o'clock last night.
Yeah, you were picking glass shards out of your everything.
Yep.
Hopefully not your person.
No. It all kind of just crumbled into dust. Unfortunately, Coconut is not able to be in his cage for the time being. He's currently in his travel cage, which is, you know, not too small. I mean, he's definitely got room to walk around in it, but it's definitely not as big as his old cage was. And
at least it exists.
Yeah.
Which explains why he sounds pissed off tonight.
Yeah, that's why you heard him in the background.
The salt flow of like the Nile.
Mm-hmm. But so we're gonna have to probably redo the whole thing. My mom already went ahead and ordered it. Now we'll have to install it when it gets here, but it can take it said it could take up to like at the 19th at the earliest.
Yeah.
But you know, that's just them saying, you know, it could get here earlier. So hopefully that's what happens, because, you know, yeah. I told him last night that he was only going to have to do this for one night. But, you know, because we're having, you know, my dad broke his ankle and he had to get the insurance to pay for the MRI, and we're having to pay out of pocket for some stuff because, unfortunately, we don't live in Canada. He's probably just going to have to stay in there for a few days.
Yeah.
So this was a fun week, in other words.
Yeah.
Wow.
Anyway. Oh, yeah. Okay. So, with that out of the way, it's now time to start everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. Now, this week, we had a couple of different anniversaries that happened, but there was one particular anniversary that happened, I'm going to say around Tuesday.
Yeah.
You would have heard of every well air in the world except for one place. The People's Republic of China. Because this week marked the 30th anniversary of the Tiananmen Square massacre.
Yeah, they're not too pleased about that.
Yeah, so you guys are somewhat familiar with the Tiananmen Square thing. You know, late 80s, everybody got China decided, you know, we were getting kind of pissed off. We want the, you know, the party's not ruling crap well. We need to get together and tell them and get them to do shit.
Yeah.
Just straight up fire all of them, you know, desert, hopefully from a cannon.
Yeah.
So exactly why it happened, you know, who was involved with it, you know, it's kind of, the details have gotten kind of muddled over the decades because, well, for one thing, the People's Republic of China's government certainly doesn't help, but there's also, like the way that it was reported by a lot of the major news stations, and some of the details kind of got muddled until we found the truth, like, years after the fact. Basically, this is what you need to know. So Mao Zedong died in 1976, all right? Mm-hmm. So for most of the late 70s, the country was governed by what's usually called the Gang of Four. And this is usually, you know, one of these included people like Jiang Qing, who was Mao's widow, and some other groups, and three other old school party officials as well. Then the big party heads decided they really didn't like these people. So they purged them. And And they ended up at the head of everything eventually became a guy you may have heard of by the name of Deng Xiaoping. Deng Xiaoping is the guy that started the market reforms that eventually turned China into like a world superpower. Now, you know, so he opened up, like, did, like, opened up the market somewhat and stuff like that, and suddenly China had all this foreign capital coming in, and they were living pretty high off the hog, right? Except what Deng Xiaoping and his cohorts didn't, predict was the insane amount of corruption and nepotism that was going to just absolutely pollute the entire body economy. Like, it, you know, just, you know, people getting on the take, guys scouring wages from the workers at factories, people straight up just intimidating people to hand over cash, shit like this. So by the late 80s, people were not particularly happy, shall we say, with the way things were going. Eventually, what happened is all of this started to really come to a head in the late 80s. Suddenly, you started seeing things like what's called the Democracy Wall, which was this huge wall in Beijing where people started putting up like big character posters and, you know, poems and stuff that, you know, talked about, like, you know, anger at stuff like, saying stuff like, you know, Mao was 30% right and 70% wrong, which is like a play on like an old saying from the Deng Xiaoping era. Just general overall people just kind of pissed off at the government. Also, you should know by this point that the United States was already very much interested in the way things are going in China. And so they started sending in CIA agents to make contact with some of the what are called the pro-democracy movement. And so they started, getting them contacts in the United States and in Hong Kong, which for those you don't know, was still under British control at that point. As it went on, everything really started to get to a head. And then in 1989, a really popular party member by the name of Hu Yaobang he actually died of a heart attack on April 15th, 1989. Now, the reason he was well liked is because he was part of the sort of liberal wing of the Communist Party. He believed in like opening up. You know, freedom of speech, freedom of the press, opening up the markets more, starting like private labor unions, things like, and also he was also like one of the few members of the party at the time who were openly encouraging, you know, the people in the Tiananmen Square to, you know, have their protests. And so suddenly he died, and as what usually happens to some members of the Chinese Communist Party, after they die, a bunch of the other members get together and decide they're going to denounce him for his crimes against the people and all this stuff. And then, you know, that just made the protesters even angrier, and finally, you know, eventually it got to the point where by June of 1989, Tiananmen Square was filled with about a million plus protesters that were like protesting and organizing around the clock. They put forth a series of what's called the Seven Demands, which amongst other things includes, first, affirm Hu Yaobang's views on democracy and freedom as correct. Number two, admit that the campaigns against spiritual pollution and bourgeois liberalization have been wrong. The spiritual pollution campaign, which basically it was just it was like a campaign by the party to try and get quote unquote bourgeois Western liberal ideas from the populace. Number three, publish information on the income of state leaders and their family members. Yeah, party member.
The
big dudes. No, they did not like that. Number four, allow privately run newspapers and stop press censorship.
You know how that went.
Yeah. This one is actually still, you know, for those of you who don't know, all of the media in China is primarily state-owned. I mean, it associates itself with quasi-private companies, but the government is pretty much in charge of pretty much every part of the economy. Number five, increase funding for education and raise the pay of intellectuals. Now, you know, in intellectuals in this terms, they're talking about like, you know, professors, basically. Yeah. Tenured individuals, you know. Number six, end restrictions on demonstrations in Beijing. To this day, you cannot hold a privately organized political protest in Beijing. It has to be state sponsored. And number seven, provide objective coverage of students in official media. Because at this point, the official government media had been sort of portraying the students as like young hooligans and, you know, who have been corrupted by bourgeois foreigners, stuff like that. Now, the thing about Tiananmen Square, about like the movement of them, is who exactly they were and like what their whole goals were sometimes gets it gets people, because depending on where you are, people will often, you know, misinterpret what exactly it is that these guys want. Because the thing was, these protesters were like pretty diverse, and at most you could sort of genuinely sort of group them roughly into like three groups. So the first groups you had were the undergrad, were the recent college graduates. These guys were, now that's the first group, and these guys were probably the most left wing of all the groups. They tended to be like the children of the individuals of the, you know, the individuals and families of party members that did really well during the Mao era. They tended to be the ones that, you know, if you ever see like images of the Tiananmen Square protests from that era and you see the guys walking around with pictures of Chairman Mao, these are the guys I'm talking about. They were the ones who wanted to like really get back, you know, open up party democracy like it was during the Mao era. And, you know, to like sort of curb the over bureaucratization, because there's a lot of things about Mao that are not necessarily good, but the one thing he didn't like was he didn't like how closed and bureaucratized the Communist Party was. So those are the guys, they kind of took up the mantle of Chairman Mao as sort of their inspiration. In the middle, you had workers, mostly factory workers from the big cities like Beijing and Shanghai. And basically, these guys were angry because the sort of economic liberalization policies that Deng Xiaoping and his people had sort of inspired had greatly reduced what they used to call the Iron Rice Bowl, which was basically like the nickname for like the very generous welfare state that existed in the People's Republic of China during the Mao era. And these guys were generally just angry at like the big party bosses who they thought were getting rich off these economic liberalizations while, you know, their welfare was being undercut and their wages were being garnished. And finally, the last group you can basically were the undergrads. And these were basically like the most pro-Western group. They tended to they were really big on the ideas of like freedom of speech, freedom of the press. They wanted more market liberalization. That didn't necessarily mean that they wanted to get rid of the welfare state. They actually wanted the welfare state to be strengthened, but they wanted more of the markets to be more opened up for more private entrepreneurs. And so you have all three of these groups in Tiananmen Square protesting around the clock, And at the time, as for the Communist Party itself, as you can imagine, they were straight terrified of what was happening.
They're shitting and pissing themselves.
Yeah, because they pretty much looked at this as like a direct, just like a direct, it's like, holy shit, we are completely losing, our hold on the country. And if we don't do something soon, the whole country is going to descend into chaos. And if you know anything about China's history, when the government collapses, things get bad.
Yes.
If you've played Dynasty Warriors enough, you know where this shit usually leads.
Yep.
So,
Romance and of the Three Kingdoms.
Yeah. So, in the Communist Party at the time, much like with the people in Tiananmen Square, you had your three rough factions. On the one hand, you had the liberal wing, which, you know, Hu Baiyang was part of. Those are the guys that wanted to open up the party more, open it up to freedom of speech, stuff like that. Then he had the quote-unquote conservative part of the party that were really hardcore on the Marxist-Leninist dogma and wanted to basically go in and crush what they thought was a foreign-instigated rebellion, which unfortunately is not, you know, unprecedented in Chinese history. And then, of course, you had the group in the center who, you know, on the one hand, they understood the need of the – they understood, yeah, maybe we need to do something about this because shit's getting out of control. And, but on the other hand, they also sympathized with the liberals' idea of, you know, liberalizing the markets, which is where Deng Xiaoping got a lot of his supporters from. Deng Xiaoping rested squarely in the center at the time since he was, you know, the general secretary of the party. And eventually what happened is the conservative wing of the party ended up winning out. And so on June 4th, in the morning of June 4th, 1989, the People's Republic of China, the People's Liberation Army officially announced that they were entering Tiananmen Square and were going to disperse all of the protesters there. Now, when we talk of what's called the Tiananmen Square massacre, that's actually kind of a misnomer because very little of the violence actually happened in the square proper. And in fact, this is kind of what the current Chinese government uses as sort of like their rebuttal to the Tiananmen Square story. It's like there was no violence in the square. And technically they are correct. There wasn't really any violence in the square. By that point, most of the protesters, once it had been announced that the party was entering Tiananmen, the army was entering, most of them did pretty much what I think most of us would do, which was that they cut tail and ran. Yeah, like, fuck this, I'm going. But they didn't all go. But instead of staying in Tiananmen, they basically spread out into areas in and around Beijing. And that is where the majority of the violence happened. Basically, there were clashes between the military and the police and the protesters. There were reports of protesters setting cops on fire in their cars. They started attacking the tanks. Members of the People's Liberation Army started firing en masse on the protesters. It was a shit show all around, basically. But eventually everything quieted down and, it was announced that, okay, so then all the tanks that we know famously rolled in Tiananmen Square, they all lined up and they got ready to exit the city until one gentleman in a white shirt and a hat carrying a bag for reasons nobody has ever been able to garnish decided to stand in front of them and block them for a few minutes. Does this sound familiar?
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yep.
Here, I'll refresh your memory real quick.
No, we've all seen the photo.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but we might as well put it up because some people might not have.
Ball's Jeff. The size of the fucking country.
There he is. Known through the years as Tank Man. And that's pretty much been the end of what Tiananmen Square was. Ultimately, although the, you know, what ended up happening is the liberal faction of the party ultimately lost. The more authoritarian part of the party basically gained control. Deng Xiaoping basically was ousted as general secretary. He wouldn't come back until like 1996. And to this day, whenever the anniversary of Tiananmen Square comes around in the People's Republic of China, they fire that great firewall and they do every goddamn thing possible they can to control the narrative of the anniversary. Now, it's often somewhat thought that the vast majority of people in China have never heard of what happened, or like it's like a blank in their history. That's actually not true. The majority of people in China know what actually happened. It's just that the party is really heavy on controlling the kind of information that people can access. But that is, of course, unless you have a VPN.
Yeah.
Which
is dangerous business there.
actually illegal.
Yes
there
and
now.
No. Yes and no, actually. Technically, VPNs are illegal, but VPNs are also necessary because that's how all the corporations do business there.
Mm-hmm. I suppose they would have to.
Yeah. One of the things about China that you notice is that the government bloviates a lot, but when it comes to actually like following the law on a lot of stuff, they tend to sort of look the other way on some things and not on others.
Yeah, when it benefits them, they tend to.
Yeah. Pretty much the only place in China that commemorated the Tiananmen incident was in Hong Kong this year, wherein they put up a replica of the Goddess of Democracy statue, which is a sort of haphazard plaster statue that the pro-democracy people put up during the demonstrations. It vaguely looks like a Chinese socialist realist style version of the Statue of Liberty. But, and that's basically the story of the Tiananmen Square. And that has been yet another installment of Brandon's Random Factoid.
All right.
So.
Cool.
Yeah. Well, I mean, not cool.
Well, yeah, but.
Yeah. But, yeah.
Good information.
Yeah. Basically, the government has been silent about the Tiananmen Square incident for 30 years now, and eventually we're not going to know the extent of it until like another decade or so when the archives start opening up. But anyway, okay, so now we are now going to start off the show, as we always do, with the show proper. And first and foremost, we always have to start off with the asshole of the week. And this week, we had yet another American tradition fired up again when a man went to Virginia Beach and killed 12 people at his former workplace.
Yep. Yeah, so this was, he worked in a, what was it, a municipal building?
Mm-hmm.
Virginia Beach Municipal Center. This happened around 4 o'clock. In the afternoon, when a longtime public utilities employee entered Building 2 and began to indiscriminately fire upon all the victims.
Yep.
Yep. Let's see. Yeah, one of the officers got injured in this exchange, but the shooter was, I believe, killed as well. So he was armed with a .45 caliber handgun that had a suppressor on it. They found more extended magazines on him, and yeah, he did. He went through all 3 floors of the building and killed various people on there.
All right. Yeah. Fuck this guy.
Yeah.
Largely, they've been doing. The media has been doing a lot of what it can to actually not publicize this guy's identity.
Yeah,
they've been trying to focus more on the victims, which is something I wish they'd done in mass shootings in the past. Maybe the media is finally coming around to it. I don't know. But yeah, so this guy had a silencer and longer magazines, which you may know. I mean, there's been campaigns against those things, and then there's also been campaigns to make them more widely available. Yeah, I guess I wonder who's guilty for that.
Oh, just God-loving Americans.
Yeah, God in this instance being an acronym for guns on demand.
Yeah, yeah. Sure.
But yeah, so God, fuck these people, seriously.
Yeah.
But anyway, just to wipe the taste out of our mouth and to not publicize that person anymore, we will now turn to someone who should be publicized a lot. Our hero of the week, and our hero of the week is current Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, who pledged this year to give out $1.4 billion of yearly aid for women and girls' health worldwide.
Yep. So I believe this is an increase in what they're doing currently. It goes from 2023 to 2030. Sort of increasing the amount for their next round of that stuff when that begins. And yeah, it's definitely is in stark contrast to what's happening on the southern border of Canada.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Where a lot of the people that are running governments in various states do not give a shit about women.
No.
Or anyone else for that matter.
Yeah.
No, that's true. Mm. God, can we trade places, please?
No, yeah, we'll send Trump up to north, and we'll take Trudeau. It'll be a
can we borrow him for a while?
I'm not seeing the advantageous portion of this trade. No,
it's a shit deal.
Yeah, even Trump would take that.
Board running Toronto. We'll just have a guy like him over the whole thing.
Nope.
Yeah. God damn it. I hope he sends some of that money this way.
Well, I'm sure some of it will end up there, yeah.
You know, because Planned Parenthood could use some of it.
Yeah. Yep. The U.S. is technically still part of the world, despite what Trump thinks.
Yeah. Hopefully he won't be president after next year, so.
Yeah.
But anyway. Okay. So, with that out of the way, it's now time to start the proper show proper. And as always, we have to start with the Trump dump. And this week, Trump decided to take the show on the road up to the UK.
Yep, up
didn't
to
go
our
very well.
Place.
Yeah, so as you can guess, he's not very well liked in the UK or anywhere else for that matter, but they're much more open about it over there.
Yeah.
So, you know, he went up there. His family paraded around with Queen Liz. I'm sure she just loved doing that.
He claimed that she said they were the best guests they've had ever, or whatever it was. It's like, no.
If that was true, then why didn't she let them stay in Buckingham Palace?
It's like, nope.
No, that's not what happened. She actually, she's like, I am not letting that orange piece of shit into my castle. We may have 700 something rooms in this place, but they will all smell like Big Macs and filet of fish if he's allowed to stay here. So yeah, basically everywhere he went during that time, they were mobbed by protesters. Even though he claimed on the television, he's like, I didn't see any protesters. I saw a small group, but I mean, there wasn't anything. Yeah, bullshit. Him and the entire Trump clan were basically hounded by them everywhere they went.
Yeah,
and usually the Trump blimp wasn't too far behind.
You know how self-important he is when he thinks everybody's there for him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I saw some interesting stuff about the trip. Donald Trump Jr. was at an Irish pub showing off his beer, and I saw somebody's like, as a bartender in Ireland, that's a fuck you beer. Because it's like all air. That's a get the fuck out of here. But they'll pause it. Maybe he did it himself and just doesn't know how to do it, so he thinks he did a good job. which could also be true.
Yeah. Also, you know that the British absolutely love them when he suddenly thinks that he knows how the British should run their healthcare system?
which the Tories would love to have an American-style system.
Hmm. Oh, they would like to, but it ain't going to fucking happen.
Yeah. Because
I can guarantee you, if they tried to take the country off the NHS into a private healthcare system, you will see every single royal, Tory, and lobbyist in the UK strung up on the streetlights by the following morning.
Yeah, I've been seeing
it basically be the Glorious Revolution all over again.
Yes. Yeah, and I've seen people sort of in the wake of that trying to figure out like how much the procedures they've had would have cost if they had an American-style system.
Yeah, and they're like, and they realize, no. Mm-mm. No, thank you. We're quite satisfied here, love. Also, I'm pretty sure that per capita, even though they have the NHS, they actually pay fewer in taxes than we do. So, you know, I guess way to go, Britain.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, as people like Milo Yiannopoulos have shown us, Trump does have his lovers in the UK. And unfortunately, one of those people, remember I mentioned the Trump blimp earlier?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, some crazy bent decided to pop it. And she cut herself in the process. Then she was arrested, you know, for carrying a knife. Because you can't carry a knife around in the UK. Without good reason. That. They'll lock your ass up.
Yeah, arrested for being in possession of a printed or bladed article.
Hmm.
But then she also tried
apparently
to...
this woman's been on...
She accused the police of assaulting her.
Hmm.
Yeah. Apparently this woman's been on the dole for like 30 years, and she's been arrested like 40 times.
Hmm.
So she has a history with the constabulary, shall we say. Yeah.
It's like,
and she thinks that like by, you know, popping the balloon, she's vanquished it. They made copies, you dumbass.
Yeah, it's like, I'm sure people would easily pay for another one if they needed it.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like you've already got the plans for it.
Yeah.
They just have to get the materials and make it.
All right.
What you is another matter, but anyway.
Yeah. All right. Next up, finally, now with that out of the way, we don't have to talk about Trump anymore.
Mm.
Now we actually got some good news stories. All right, so here we go. First things first. The House of Representatives passed a $19.1 billion disaster relief program that is also going to help Puerto Rico, in spite of what the GOP tried to do.
Yep. They tried three times to block it, and fourth time was the successful one.
Yep.
354 to 58. You might guess which party had all the opposition. And yeah, there's already passed in the Senate, which is waiting for the House to get through it, and Trump said he was going to even sign it. Despite there not being any funding for the wall in it.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is going to help out the areas hit by floods recently. Wildfires, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, that we're talking with the floods. We're talking about like the Midwest. That whole area has basically been it's awfully soggy for this time of year.
Yeah, some places are now just giant lakes.
Yep,
with some houses in there.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, we're at the start of hurricane season as well.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that. Oh man, I cannot wait till we have to deal with another tropical storm in Georgia.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's good news. Hopefully it'll get through. Next up, next story. So one of the big like issues over the last couple of years has been the Dreamers. Those are the people who were, you know, given the opportunity for citizenship. They were the children and, you know, of undocumented immigrants who were, you know, given DACA to sort of offer them as like a path to citizenship. you know, if they do some service and everything, let them keep their green cards and stuff. And then, you know, that came under fire in the last couple of years. And some good people were going to have their citizenship taken away from them. Well, this week, the House actually passed a bill that's going to actually protect those kids and offer them a path to citizenship once again.
Yep. Yeah, and this is not going to be heard by the Senate at all. It's just a ploy essentially to be like, well, we did our jobs. You know, what's the anthropomorphic turtle doing up there? But yeah, it's let's see. It would grant permanent residency with the path to citizenship to more than 2 million immigrants across three categories. It permanently protects from deportation dreamers, immigrants who came to the country illegally as children, as well as certain recipients of the temporary protected status and deferred and forced departure programs, which grant work permits and protect from deportation citizens of certain countries that have undergone natural or man-made disasters. Which is good.
Yeah, it's good.
I mean, you had something that was not broken to begin with, but...
No.
You know.
And they had seven Republicans voting for this in favor.
Yep.
A guy named Don Bacon from Nebraska.
Well,
which is a good thing.
You know, bacon makes everything better. So.
Keep in mind, when we talk about bacon in the U.S., we're talking about the streaky kind.
Yeah.
Yep, nice.
Not that flat, warmed over garbage you have in Canada. I'm joking, of course. That's good bacon.
It's ham and it's also awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, false bacon.
Yeah. But, all right, next up. So, like I mentioned at the top of the show, there's been those, like, that wave of anti-abortion legislation that's been going throughout South, basically. Here in Georgia, we got ours. Some of them have been blocked by court order for right now, but one of them actually got completely curtailed this week because in North Carolina, the Democratic governor actually he vetoed it. And so the House went back to try and get it doing again. They couldn't get the votes to override it. So that abortion bill is dead in the water in North Carolina.
Yeah. Yeah, it needed 72 votes to override it. They only got 67.
Mm-hmm.
So pretty close. It was called the Born Alive Measure. We directed healthcare practitioners to grant newborns delivered after an abortion the same protections as other patients. Cooper's veto message said the measure was unnecessary and laws already protect newborns.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it created a new crime against doctors and nurses who fail to care for an infant delivered during an unsuccessful abortion.
Mm. Yeah.
Which is like, if it's an unsuccessful abortion and they're born.
Yeah, need to create infants. New crimes.
And new doctor crimes.
That's first of all, abortions in the United States don't happen that far ahead into the pregnancy.
Yeah.
Like that should be common knowledge, but
it's a last-ditch effort to save the life of the mother.
Yeah,
it's in fact that is not even called an abortion.
No.
It's actually got a medical term for it. I know it because I'm trained to be a medical coder and we've got a code for it in our code book. It's actually the actual term, like the actual term for it is intact dilation and extraction. It's a surgical procedure that 99.9% of the time does on children that are actually unwanted pregnancies, but had to be removed because either, you know, they had some kind of infection that was going to kill the mother, or, you know, it was malformed to the point that if it was born, it would basically take half of the mother with it. Stuff like that. If you can't tell, that's one thing that really gets me riled up because they politicize something something that is already super traumatic for everyone involved, and nobody involved wants to do it. Hmm. But it's a messy, sometimes medical necessity that has to be done. It's like an amputation. You don't want to do it. The patient doesn't want to have to do it. The doctor doesn't want to have to do it. But unless you want to die of gangrene, it has to go. Yeah, that's right, Coco. But anyway. Next up, Venice. And by Venice, I'm guessing we mean Italy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. A massive cruise ship actually crashed into a wharf in Venice, Italy, after it ended up having some mechanical trouble, and it ended up injuring four people. You're going to have to explain this one, because this sounds like a comedy of errors.
Yeah, it is kind of a crazy thing that happens. There's a video for it, which is kind of crazy, because you can hear the siren going on the whole time, is trying to warn people, like, hey, get the fuck away. Some shit's happening here.
Gigantic aqua missile coming this way. Yeah.
Yeah, and the crazy thing about the video is, like, just due to the weird scale, this thing looks like it's moving so slowly, but you have to realize it's, like, this huge, gigantic thing that is moving probably, you know, 30, 40, 50 miles an hour. And it's sort of slowly scraping along the side of this wharf. Then there's another ship there that is just getting pushed away as it's sort of crashing into it. And all along, as you're watching it, there's just a bunch of people running away as best they can. Four managed to get injured, unfortunately. But, yeah, it's kind of a crazy thing. They had, like, a mechanical error happen that just kept them from actually being able to slow down. And it's going into kind of a river that's a bit too small for it. Yeah. And there's like a bunch of tourists, I think. It was four people. I think it said ages 67 to 72. People from Australia, New Zealand, and the U.S., I think, were the people that got injured. And, yeah, fortunately, it didn't seem like anything too serious other than, you know, probably some cosmetic damage to the ship, and the other one that got hit, an engine failure, which was reported by the
egos.
Yeah, and just people be like, "Oh shit!" Yeah, like I said, they had a similar issue like 8 years ago, around 11. So, quite a bit of time since the last time it happened, but yeah. But they say, like, cruise ships must not sail down the Giudecca, which, yeah, we've been working on moving them for months now and are nearing a solution, so, yeah.
Golly, I swear.
Yep. Just kind of a weird, humorous kind of situation, just see unravel.
Yeah. At least it wasn't fatal, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Could have been. Much, like, much worse.
Yeah, there's one recently, I forget where it's at, that had like 21 people die.
Yeah, that's
not great.
Yeah.
All right.
We have big boats where they're not supposed to be.
Yeah.
Mostly dignities were just harmed.
Yeah. Dignities and lots of paperwork having to be filled out.
Oh, yes.
In Italian.
Yeah. So, all right, so next up, who here is Nutella fans?
Me.
I enjoy it.
Missed one here.
Chocolate, tasty choc. Oh, I missed that one. Okay. Hold on, I'll get back to that one in just a second. This one is actually a sports story about the Olympics, about runner Caster Semenya. Recently, they won a case in the Swiss Supreme Court that is going to allow them to keep running. Now, the problem here is, I believe Caster Semenya is trans. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, is Caster Semenya, is that a trans man or a trans woman? Trans man?
Woman.
Trans woman. Okay. Well, I was going to say, was it male to female or female to male? The reason I'm asking is because they're talking about testosterone here. And that's usually for female to male. But anyway, the point is, there had been some problems because, you know, when you go into the Olympics for stuff like that, you know, they're really heavy-handed on making sure that there's no, like, juicing going on. So yeah. They have a tendency – one of the things they'll sometimes do is they'll make the athletes take medications that reduce testosterone production. Of course, this is a problem for someone like Semenyuk, who, of course, is transitioning. Hmm. So yeah. You can imagine this causes an issue with the Olympic Committee, and basically now it looks like they'll actually be able to still stay in the Olympics coming up next year.
Yeah, it's an interim ruling, so it's going to sort of force the group that has been trying to outlaw her being able to participate for a bit, and that whole thing might take long enough that she'll be able to run in the Olympics coming up.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I'm looking at the bits they say about her history, essentially that, let me see, Semenya has battled track authorities for the right to run in what she describes as her natural form for a decade or since she was subjected to gender verification tests by the IAAF at the age of 18 when she won her first world title in 2009.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been like a long time battle. And yeah, it's the IAAF rule applies to female athletes with mental conditions known as difference of sex development, DSD, and specifically those born with a typical male XY chromosome pattern. Athletes also have testosterone levels higher than, or the athletes also have testosterone levels higher than a typical female range, which the IAAF argues gives them an unfair athletic advantage over other women because the hormone helps build muscle and increase oxygen levels in the blood. To compete in the Olympics, World Championships, or other international athletic events, each athlete must reduce her testosterone level and keep it within acceptable range for 6 months prior to competing. The IAAF gives three medical options to do that: daily contraceptive pill, monthly testosterone blocking injection, or surgery. The treatments could inhibit athletic performance, but by how much is uncertain, also posing risks of other negative side effects. And prescribing medical treatments solely for sports eligibility reasons has been labeled as unethical by an array of experts, including the World Medical Association, which represents doctors across the world. And let's see, Semenya's lawyers say her appeal to the Swiss Supreme Court will focus on human rights, with the rules folks forcing her to take medication or having surgery to be eligible to compete. And those rules just came into effect last month. Semenya and... Semenya publicly refused to take medication. She's been forced to medically suppress her testosterone levels before under previous IAAF rulings that were dropped in 2015.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's kind of just this bullshit she's had to deal with for the last 10 years.
Yeah, it's... look, at this point, I am absolutely convinced that maybe the concept of gendered sports is bullshit.
Kind of, sort of, in a lot of cases, yes.
And, you know, maybe it's time that we, you know, especially running, you know, in a lot of the Olympic sports, we could probably just, you know, gender integrate in most of them, and it would still be about as equal as it normally would be.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, there are plenty of sports where men and women could be playing together, like baseball, where, you know, there's no real physical interaction outside of some circumstances, but other than that, it's like there's no reason women can't bat and field and pitch.
Baseball or golf or hell, even basketball.
Well, you know? I have two words for you. Awesome Kong. Pat knows exactly who I'm talking about.
Yeah, wrestling's had women fighting men for quite a while since, you know, China.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, just look at her and, yeah, then tell me that women are not suitable.
Exactly.
Because she will fuck you up.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. She looks like she could. Yeah, I'm looking at a picture of her right now. Damn.
So.
Yeah, the only problem is just writing and wrestling for women who are, you know, bigger than normal.
Yeah. Or, you know. Or, well, in Awesome Kong's case, she's also black.
Yeah.
And, well, you know how writing and professional wrestling sometimes is when ethnicity gets involved.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway. Now, back to that story I was talking about earlier. We're all Nutella fans, right?
Yeah. I'm a big fan of Nutella.
Yeah. Tasty chocolate hazelnut spread that you put on toast, or it is one of the most unhealthiest things you can put in your body. But
there's a local bakery that integrates it in a lot of their cookie recipes.
That stuff is great on good on toast. It's good on cake. It's good on just plain Wonder Bread.
It's great on celery.
Probably good.
If it was possible to put it on your hand and then eat your whole hand,
You mean like
it's possible. It's not advisable.
Yeah,
like Winnie the Pooh, basically.
Yeah,
just stick your hand in the jar of it and just like, all right, let's do this. This is my day.
Yeah. Well, you may want to start packing up, you know, and packing in your Nutella supply, and you know, getting ready for, shall we say, the cold times. Because there's a strike going on in France at one of the Nutella factories, and it's going to impact the supply.
So the plant produces a whopping 600,000 jars of Nutella daily, about a quarter of the world's production. But hampered access to key ingredients could threaten the factory's productivity as these guys are going on strike. And it's been 6 days of failed efforts to end it. And they're going to, let's see, the owner started threatening to fine workers involved in the blockade. Consequently, the plant management has duly informed the strikers illegally blocking the factory, that it has obtained a court order foreseeing financial penalties for those continuing to strike past Monday, June 3rd, which past that at this point. But that threat didn't deter unions. The workers' force says 160 of the factory's 350 workers are taking part in a walkout to demand 4.5% salary increases, one-time 900 euro bonuses, and better working conditions. The company offered 1.7% raise for the lowest paid workers and one-time bonuses between 0 and 400 euros, which unions say is enough to offset rising living costs. Union also complaining of deteriorating factory conditions and mounting pressure to increase productivity. More productivity for less the money. Same or less pay.
Pay your workers properly, folks.
Especially for
more product, than likely, considering this is France we're talking about, more than likely they're going to have their demands met.
Well, the weird thing is the owner of Nutella is Italian.
I didn't know that, but I'm completely unsurprised.
And the owner is.
Well, I mean, it's in the name.
That Ferrero Rocher is the owner. Make all kinds of delightful, unhealthy, delicious products.
Yeah.
Yep. Like, other than Nutella, I think they make
Almond Roca.
What? Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
They make that.
Know where this is all taking place?
Yeah.
That is relevant to one of the anniversaries celebrated recently.
Mm-hmm.
Normandy. Yeah.
Oh wow. That's right. D-Day.
Yeah, it's in Villers, Écalles in Normandy.
Yeah, we're going to give you until June 3rd. This is going to...
Was that the anniversary?
Yeah, I think it was this. Yeah.
Okay.
I think that was probably not a great bit of timing.
Yeah. I saw people also saying June 3rd is also McLovin's birthday from Superhot. They're not. It's too bad.
Yeah. Funny stuff. All right. Next up, the Obamas. Everybody knows they're getting into media production recently. They've got a plant stuff that they're going to do for Netflix. Well, they've also signed a deal with Spotify, and they're getting ready to produce a series of podcasts. And
That'll be good.
Oh, yeah. Barack Obama's voice is like asthma incarnate, so...
Yeah, I don't know if they're going to specifically be doing podcasts, but the deal says they're going to develop, produce, and lend their voices to podcasts, so we'll see what they do specifically. But, they're going to move into podcasts to kind of expand the conversation. I think Barack said, podcasts offer an extraordinary opportunity to foster productive dialogue, make people smile and make people think, and hopefully bring us all a little closer together.
Yeah.
Which, if you didn't know, I think Michelle Obama was on Conan O'Brien's podcast recently.
Mm-hmm.
During her like book tour. That was a really well done podcast.
All right, I'll keep your eyes out for that.
I don't know when it's supposed to start happening, but at some point.
Yeah, well, if they just sign now, I would guess probably a month or two.
Yeah.
Okay. Hmm. All right, that'll be interesting to see where they're going to go with this, because
presidential podcast.
Yeah, he's the first person to do it, far as I know.
He was pretty much president for most of the rise of podcasts.
Yeah,
it's true.
It was like 2004, 2005, I think.
Yeah. I think he really was like the first internet president.
Well, during the campaign in 2008, he was considered the MySpace candidate.
Yeah.
Yeah, didn't they do advertising?
How long ago that was.
And didn't they do advertising in Burnout Paradise?
Yeah, they did. They had billboards.
That was a thing.
Yes.
I was like, okay, here's Burger King and Barack Obama.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think those billboards are still in the remastered version.
I don't think so.
That is fantastic.
No. I think they're fake billboards for brands as well as some that are based on developers.
Because I got the PS3 version. So.
Yeah. Mm. That might
Don't you sometimes want to turn back the clock a little?
Yeah.
That's why retro gaming is awesome.
Mm-hmm. But anyway, so other than that, we've also got Robert Downey Jr., who has announced that he wants to be Tony Stark with the Footprint Coalition.
Yeah, so
okay, you're gonna have to explain this one to me.
Amazon had a conference called ReMars regarding Mars, I guess, in Las Vegas on Tuesday, and Robert Downey Jr. was part of the opening keynote. Where he announced this new organization called Footprint Coalition that is committed to using advanced technologies for the good of the environment. It's going to launch by April 2020. He said, between robotics and nanotechnology, we could clean up the planet significantly, if not totally, in 10 years.
It's a bit of a stretch.
He's a jokes, gotta love experts. They're like Wikipedia with character defects. Let's see. The announcement came at the end of a 20-minute-plus freewheeling talk about artificial intelligence, the MCU, Downey Jr.'s own career, and the evolution of his Tony Stark character, which featured cameos from Amazon's AI assistant Alexa, as well as Matt Damon, who joined via video. And no real details, but or how it's the organization's really going to achieve its goal, but said even making a small dent could be the most important thing he'd ever done.
Mm-hmm.
Which is true.
Yeah. I mean, if you've got money and you want to put it towards something that might actually
he's
help
got
people.
MCU money.
Yeah. So, might as well.
Like, being there from the start and kind of having the rights to get, you know, be like production credits on all 22 of those movies.
Yeah.
Is a lot of money to get.
Yeah. Especially with what Endgame is still bringing in.
Yeah.
Oh, damn. That movie is pretty much a license to print money at this point. Next up, NASA. They are opening up the ISS to private astronauts, and the first missions are believed to start as early as next year.
Yeah, so essentially like open it up to commercialization. For private astronaut missions of up to 30 days. They could start as early as next year.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Boeing, SpaceX are developing capsules to carry humans to the ISS. And the two companies will handle these private tourists and any services related to them. And yeah, the trips will last about 30 days maximum. Cost about $50 million.
Yeah.
NASA gets about $35,000 for each of the night a private astronaut spends on the ISS.
Yeah,
which
I guess I can kind of see why they would want to do this, but it's
companies will be allowed to bid for new activities for the on the ISS as NASA unveiled a new directive to enable commercial manufacturing production and allow both NASA and private astronauts to conduct new commercial activities aboard the orbiting laboratory. Let's see. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if you want a space industry, you need to have a reason for some.
Yeah, and it kind of helps, like, reduce the costs for running that thing all the time. All
right. Okay. Next up, for reasons I'm not exactly sure, the very popular indie video game Cuphead is going to be available on Teslas.
Yeah, specifically the Model 3, S, and X.
Yeah.
So well parked.
All of them.
And I believe they're working on porting Unity to the Tesla cars.
Mm-hmm.
That's sort of part of this.
That's not really that hard since the Tesla cars were on Android, at least the entertainment part of them do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And as you might know, currently they have a bunch of Atari games on there.
Yep.
Which, sure. This game you probably don't want to play in a car because you might get so pissed off. It's not good for driving.
Well, you can't play it while you're driving. That's the
no, but I mean, you know, you start getting angry and then immediately you can start driving.
Yeah, road rage.
Yeah. It's like, ah, that fucking flower boss.
Have we mentioned Elon Musk is weird?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Many
times.
Sort of confusing is like, is it just going to be free? They say it should hit later this summer.
Yeah, I think it will. I think it will be free because I think if you bought a Tesla, you probably spent enough money already.
Okay, so the limitation is it includes the game's Inkwell Isle 1 segment due to short storage limitations. So you get a little bit of the game.
Just a little bit. Just so that they could do it.
And you'll only be able to play it using a wired USB controller.
Oh, no Bluetooth.
Yeah. But yeah, that's kind of weird.
Yeah. There's a lot of these weird things in Teslas. Like the Model X has that weird, I don't even know what to call it, but it's like, it plays Mannheim Steamroller and then the doors go up and down on their own and to the music and, that with the lights and all, it's like, yeah, okay. Somebody spent a lot of time to do that, and I don't know why.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Especially when they're having kind of issues just getting production costs down.
Yeah.
So they actually make money.
Yeah. Just, oh well.
Mm-hmm. All right. That's...
Yeah. So let's talk about the shit show that was YouTube this week.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Get ready, folks, because this is a bit of a long one. So, first we got two big figures. Carlos Maza, who is a writer and commentator for Vox. You know, he occasionally does videos, he does talks, he writes articles. And then there's one of the dregs of YouTube, Steven Crowder.
Yep, very much... one of those right-wing assholes.
Yeah. Who thinks he's funny.
Mm. Yeah, clever, funny, all that stuff.
Yeah. You ever notice that right-wing comedy just never works?
Yeah.
Yeah, they don't understand what comedy is.
Yeah.
They think it's being sarcastic about things Democrats are into.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, the closest it's ever gotten to succeeding is, you know, some episodes of South Park. And even then, it's done with an irreverence that most conservatives would be very uncomfortable with.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Anyway, unfortunately, he has like 3 million followers on YouTube.
Yeah.
And so he's managed to sort of build himself a nice little niche industry. And yeah, basically for years, he has basically been harassing Carlos Maza with homophobic slurs, with t-shirts that have socialism is for fags on it.
Which they censor the A in fags. So they're like, no, it actually means figs.
Yeah.
Like,
we're
no,
not
we still- know what you mean.
Yeah, it's that
there is no plausible deniability
that,
here.
No.
Yeah.
Now, if you censored like 3 or 4 of those letters, then you might have plausible deniability. But when you're just censoring the one vowel,
yeah,
There's only like six options for that word. And
so basically, yeah. Basically, what ended up happening is that Carlos Meza, he went to Twitter and he put out a
pretty long thread.
Nice stream. Yeah, pretty long tweet thread where he basically said that, you know, he basically accused YouTube of, you know, making money off of someone who was essentially, you know, violating their terms of service on hate speech and stuff.
Yep. Yeah, it's, let's see, I'm going to read a little bit of it. He says, since I started working at Vox, Steven Crowder has been making video after video, you know, in hashtag, or in quotes, debunking Strike Through, which I assume is mm-hmm. a series he does. Mm-hmm. Every single video has included repeated overt attacks on my sexual orientation and ethnicity. And he includes a video for a sample if you really want to watch it, which I don't.
Mm-hmm.
I've been called an anchor baby, a lispy queer, a Mexican, etc. These videos get mm-hmm. millions of views on YouTube. Every time one gets posted, I wake up to a wall of homophobic race abuse on Instagram mm-hmm. and Twitter. And he shows an image here. Last year, I got doxxed, and it scared the fuck out of me. My phone's bombarded with hundreds of texts at the exact same time. The messages, mm-hmm. debate Steven Crowder. These videos make me a target of ridiculous harassment. It makes life sort of miserable. I waste a lot of time blocking abusive Crowder fanboys. And this shit derails your mental health. Mm-hmm. That being said, I'm not mad at Crowder. There will always be monsters in the world. I'm fucking pissed at YouTube, which claims mm-hmm. to support its LGBT creators and has explicit policies against harassment and bullying, with links and screenshots just in case you need it. It's been going on for years, and I've tried to flag this shit on several occasions, but YouTube is never going to actually enforce its policies. Because Crowder has 3 million YouTube subscribers, and enforcing rules would get them accused of anti-conservative bias. And it keeps going on with more and more shit there. It's a good read if you just want to dive deep into all this. But, yeah, so let's see. He did this on May 30th and 31st. He kind of ran through this whole thread. Link to YouTube and Team YouTube's accounts on Twitter. And Team YouTube finally responded on June 4th. This is a four-part tweet. Thanks again for taking the time to share all of this information with us. We take allegations of harassment very seriously. We know this is important and impacts a lot of people. Mm-hmm. Our team spent the last few days conducting in-depth review of the videos flagged to us. While we found language that was clearly hurtful, the videos as posted don't violate our policies. We've included more info below to explain this decision. As an open platform, it's crucial for us to allow everyone, from creators to journalists to late-night TV hosts, to express their opinions within the scope of our policies. Opinions can be deeply offensive, but if they don't violate our policies, they remain on our site. And this is the last one of this tweet storm. Even if a video remains on our site, it doesn't mean we endorse or support that viewpoint. There are other aspects of the channel that we're still evaluating. We'll be in touch with any further updates. Which is then basically saying, yeah, it's not great, but we fully endorse harassment on our platform.
Mm-hmm.
Because people repeatedly show them screenshots of their TOS. It says, you know, specifically, hey, we don't condone harassment, repeated attacks on people. Mm-hmm. hurtful language, that sort of stuff. It's like, okay, so your TOS is bullshit, mm-hmm. or you're lying, or all of the above, whatever. Doesn't really matter.
Get off the fucking
fence. Which got basically, they'd be like, oh, hey, Pride Month, this is great. YouTube, because mm-hmm. if you look at the YouTube account, they have the rainbow flag version of their play button.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, oh, hey, if you want more examples of corporations wanting to protest their love for LGBT employees, creators, fans, all that sort of stuff, and not giving a single fuck about it mm-hmm. when actually needed to confront this stuff, you know, YouTube's a big one. And so they got lots of mainstream media attention, attention from various YouTubers and content creators and all that. So let's go to the next part of this. They decided, you know, this is all okay. We don't have any problems with this, which leads to a lot of great headlines, like YouTube endorses harassment, you know.
Yeah, basically, YouTube is like, you know, basically YouTube pulled a Twitter, basically.
Yeah.
It was like, like, well, we, you know, it's controversial and we support free speech, you know, and all that bullshit.
Yeah, and, which is fair, but also when you can monetize it, that's where
it becomes commercial speech. And
where, you know, advertisers, you know, get into the picture. And YouTube already had issues with advertisers over the past couple of years.
Yeah.
They probably don't want people to keep taking away money because these guys don't actually get punished. It's the small guys that are, you know, at the bottom rungs of their partnership programs.
Yeah.
Because that's the money that's being taken from them, because the big guys can have other sources of money coming in. And so, yeah, this led to, like, a couple days of people losing their shit rightfully, and YouTube, like, trying to somehow detail the nuance that is doesn't exist in this policy of their thing. So they basically came back a couple days later. Let's see, where can I find it here? On the 5th, they came back, said, update our continued review. We have suspended this channel's monetization. We came to this decision because a pattern of egregious actions has harmed the broader community, is against our YouTube partner program policies. More here to a link to an article on their blog titled Preventing Harm to the Broader YouTube Community, where they're like, okay, so enough people, you know, yell at them that they realize, hey, maybe these people have a point. That maybe people violating our policies, even if they're big YouTubers, deserve actual punishment.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, which is good. You know, actually came to your senses, but it shouldn't have come to that point.
Yeah.
Because you should be following your rules and not just be like, oh, here's a slap on the wrist sort of thing. But also basically comes into this shortly thereafter. YouTube appeared to indicate that only Crowder's t-shirt sales were a violation of their policies. We're like replying, saying,
yeah.
So he said, so the fuck, this is Carlos Maza, so the fuck what? Basically all political content gets quote-unquote demonetized. Crowder's revenue stream isn't from YouTube ads. It's from selling merch and socialism for fag shirts to millions of loyal customers that YouTube continues to drive to his channel for free. Their response, to clarify, in order to reinstate monetization on his channel, he will need to remove the link to his t-shirts. Make it seem like, oh, that's the only issue. There's a link to those shirts. That's, which people, you know, blasted them for that. And then they came back and said, okay, wait, sorry for the confusion. We were responding to your tweets about the t-shirts. Again, this channel is demonetized due to continued egregious actions that have harmed the broader community. To be reinstated, we need to address all the issues with his channels. Okay, that's better. But then it basically seemed like they started demonetizing a bunch of essentially like Nazi channels. Which, good. But also, because of their algorithm, it seemed like they took down any channel that's dealt with Nazis, meaning history channels, channels about activism. And all
because some left wing YouTube, some parts of LeftTube have also gotten shit from this too.
Yeah, because they are proactively, you know, informing people about the shit these people are doing.
Yeah,
as well as even just history about Hitler and Nazis and World War II and all that shit.
This is why algorithms don't work.
Right.
Yeah.
Why they need to bite? That's why Google needs to bite the bullet and actually hire people. You know, actual human beings to monitor this shit.
They kind of do, but the problem is they're
not enough.
Yeah, they're kind of too big for it, because the amount of video that gets uploaded to their platform is like hundreds of hours per second.
Yeah,
which is
that's not an exaggeration.
No, it's a ridiculous amount of stuff, and even the people they have reviewing stuff that gets flagged for further review. Those people get burnt out after, you know, months on the job because
I bet
they're watching the worst of the worst stuff.
Yeah.
And that's,
I was on the community team at GameSpot for 6 years, and even that had its
imagine if it was pure video content from anywhere on the internet.
Yeah. Fuck that.
Yeah. To which
hell to the no.
Yeah. To which you might expect that everybody in the right wing community started doing the hashtag. If you want to go on Twitter, search hashtag VoxAdpocalypse. to see all of your favorite right-wing assholes that are still on Twitter shitting themselves and complaining about censorship and all this stuff about free speech. It's like there's no free speech on YouTube.
No.
It's not the government.
No.
Not yet, at least. Maybe one day Google will be running the government, but for now, they're not.
Yeah.
I'm looking at a tweet from Steven Crowder. To all the independent YouTube creators hit by the hashtag VOD adpocalypse, which if you're using a hashtag, fuck you. Because you're not the any good people that got hit by this.
Hmm.
I don't care about your politics or anything else. We're in this together. I'll fight you for your free speech. I'm like, oh, fuck you. Oh, conveniently, he has 666 comments on this tweet.
Good. It's the devil. That's great.
Yes. I need to print screen that. Okay. I'll use
that later. Snipping tool.
Yes. And lots of people are attacking Carlos Maza, as you would expect, because, of course, especially talking about him inciting violence. You remember the milkshake stuff that was happening in Ireland and the UK?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Saying that he's inciting violence against conservatives by saying, hey, if you've got a milkshake, dump it on people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, that's not great, but also it's a fucking milkshake.
It seems like people calling violence on that have forgotten what violence is.
Yeah.
People in Ireland and the UK know what violence is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They've been unfortunate victims of bombings and knifings and vehicle violence and all that sort of stuff.
Mm.
Over the last few years.
Yeah.
Like, don't fucking elevate milkshakes to that.
Hmm.
That's just making a mess of somebody.
Yeah.
And they're angry for a few hours, however long it takes them to go get a shower and change.
Mm-hmm.
Ruining an overpriced suit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which is good for shitty people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe that'll teach you to be less racist openly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, there's a peppy looking on this. Okay, you know it's of all reaching all the right people.
Mm.
Oh, George Orwell.
Quote. Mm-hmm.
Oh man, this is getting this is hitting
all the buttons. And what's especially it's especially ironic when you remember that George Orwell was a socialist.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh hey, here's a version of death visiting. Let's see, college campuses, Trail of Blood movies. Late night comedy and snuck on YouTube store. Okay. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. All right.
Mm.
No, these are all the best people. Oh, another George Orwell quote.
Seriously.
Oh, free speech is when you call when you can call people slurs online. Okay, maybe that one's actually good.
Seriously, have none of these people ever read a book? Of course, they've never read a fucking book.
Yeah.
Who am I kidding?
No, but also you might not be surprised that in the wake of this. Crowder's friends created a new shirt. I think it said Carlos Maza is a fag.
Oh, classy.
Basically took that
the imagination that must have taken.
Yeah, the previous shirt and just made a slight change to the face to put glasses on it, maybe change the beard a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
To look like Maza's. So it's like, oh, you just did lazy Photoshop of this.
Mm.
But yeah, so they stepped up for him to make sure he's not losing any more money. And then for some reason, more conservatives joined this, like Ted Cruz. Says he supports Steven Crowder. Let's see, what does he specifically say here? This is nuts. YouTube needs to explain why Steven Crowder is banned, but Samantha Bee, Ivanka is a feckless cunt, and Jim Carrey, look at my pretty picture of Governor Kay Ivey being murdered in the womb, aren't. Jim Carrey is not on YouTube. I am Sam B. Yeah, Samantha B is. Let me see what. Like somebody. What is on here? Like. That's not a slur, really. That content's kind of a slur. I don't know.
Well, that entire string of tweets was not exactly coherent in any way.
Yeah. And he says, no coherent standard explains it, which is true. Here's an idea. Don't blacklist anybody.
When he clearly doesn't know what the word coherent means.
No.
Nope.
But it says don't blacklist anybody, which is, no, that's not a way you run a platform.
No. It's it's one thing to have ground rules. It's another thing to enforce it. And consistency is key, which is what YouTube is starting to figure out.
Yeah. And here's the thing. You can have fairly lax policies on what can be on there and all that. It's like, yeah, let some bad people on there. But when they get to the point where they're harassing people, promoting all the worst kinds of things, like, that's your platform actively endorsing that stuff.
Yeah. That's like, nope, that's not good.
You can't be like, well, we didn't do it. It's like, no, it's on your platform. It's being thrown into the algorithms to recommend to people.
Yeah.
Just like the flat earth stuff and all that. It's entering all that and trying to radicalize people because even if it's not directly the algorithm is created for this way, but just through the biases of the people that made it, it's like this stuff spreads in a way to, you know, kind of keep certain messages going.
Mm.
Especially as you get those right-wing people create tons of video over every little thing.
Yeah.
Basically,
so then
Ted Cruz and Steven Crowder.
Yeah, fuck those people.
Yeah. In that order. Mm. Now we've got one more big story for you. Apple had their WWDC conference, and it was bougie as fuck.
Of course.
Yeah, they showed off a bunch of stuff. Mm-hmm. A lot of it's just new OSs for each of their different platforms.
Yeah, just fine.
Phones got some good stuff.
Dark mode.
There's controller support for PS4 and Xbox One controllers people actually want to play with.
Yeah, instead of the Apple ones.
Yeah, for the iPhone, iPad, and Apple TV. So, you know, that Remote Play app that Sony released on iOS recently? They can actually use the controller that is necessary for it.
Yeah.
Instead of trying to hope that, like, the one controller that has, like, L3, R3 on it is okay.
Yeah.
So that's in, like, beta now, so people are starting to use it. Seems like it works pretty well.
Mm.
You also need the specific Bluetooth Xbox One controller. Not the launch ones.
Yeah,
I don't have
any of the ones that came with the Xbox One S and beyond are fine.
Yeah, I think the ones that don't let you plug a plug headphones into it.
Yeah, the
old ones.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's good news. Like Apple embracing existing technologies instead of creating arbitrary new ones.
Yeah.
They also created a new sign-in button. So like how you have Google and Facebook and these other different sort of sign-in buttons for various services.
Yep.
That generates a fake email as a placeholder that will forward to your real email, so you're not necessarily giving out your real email directly to these services.
Yeah.
If you don't want to.
Yeah. Which is a feature I'm wondering what took so damn long to happen.
Yeah.
Because,
Yeah. A lot of this stuff seems like, oh, we haven't for some reason done this yet. Like they have dark mode on iOS 13, which Android is also about to start doing.
Yeah,
pretty soon as well.
Embrace the dark mode. The dark mode is great.
Yes.
Mm. They also announced new hardware, which includes the Mac Pro.
Yeah.
Which is
a cheese grater.
Yeah, they're bringing back the cheese grater because the old Mac Pro before the trash can looked like a cheese grater.
This is like a cheese grater on wheels with handles on top. It's crazy looking, but it's $6,000.
Starting at $6,000.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because remember, they're a fashion company.
Well, I actually talked to some Mac people who have been waiting for this exact thing to come out. These are folks who do a lot of 3D animation and stuff, and they're like,
if you're doing any shit like that, you're working on a Mac.
Well, they're doing that, but basically what they told me was a fully loaded Mac Pro like this replaces three machines for them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Yeah, the weird thing about all this is this was a consumer-facing showing.
Well,
they announced a lot of like pro-sumer stuff here.
Yeah.
For the hardware. It was
a developer conference, so I guess
little bit of both.
Yeah.
But this thing was still, like, streamed publicly, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, so that's public-facing, which is why some of this stuff gets mocked. But it has An Intel Xeon processor with 8, 12, 16, 24, 28 cores. 12 DIMM slots allow for a maximum of 1.5 terabytes of ECC DDR4 system memory, which seems like a lot.
That's a lot. That's almost enough to run Chrome.
Which is, like, I'm thinking about getting, like, 16 gigs to add to my PC. Mm. And, like, 1.5 terabytes, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Mm. I wouldn't have
you
to
just open the case and a giant scrotum flies out.
It's like, here, let's just inject a hard drive into the RAM, basically.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. When you have that much RAM, the type of use case for that is really big video files, really big Photoshop files, or a shit ton of virtual machines, which a lot of people
lots of rendering do. Yeah. That's stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. 8 PCI expansion slots, 4 double wide and 4 single wide.
Yeah.
Which means just stick all those damn 2080s in there. Yeah, all the fucking $1,000 cards.
The top end video card for this will be the Radeon Vega 2 Duo.
Okay.
With 64 gigs of RAM per card. And that's a dual GPU card. So you could technically have four GPUs with 128 gigs of RAM on the video.
Yeah. Two of the double wides are MPX modules to deliver extra power. There's an extra half-length X4 PCIe slot with an I/O slot installed to add Thunderbolt and USB ports. Because of course, you have to have Thunderbolt in there.
Yep.
Apple built a brand new hardware accelerator card called Afterburner that has an FPGA chip. It's optimized to process ProRes and ProRes RAW video.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And the power supply is a 1.4 kilowatt power supply.
Yeah, I kind of giggled when they said that.
Yeah. Getting closer to the 1.21 gigawatts.
Yeah.
just need another 1,000% increase.
Yeah.
And it makes me think about that Penny Arcade comic when they got their electric bill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but these would be for places that already have insane electric bills.
Yeah.
Let's see. The Pro Display XDR is the monitor they announced alongside this. It was 6K resolution.
Mm-hmm.
6016 by 3384.
Yep.
It's 32-inch LCD.
Yeah.
It's got true 10-bit color and DCI P3 color gamuts, a 1,000,000:1 contrast ratio, and a sustained full screen brightness of up to 1,000 nits with a limited peak of up to 1,600 nits.
Yeah. For
It's $5,000.
And $6,000.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The stand is sold separately for $1,000.
So $7,000.
Or you can buy a mount for $200.
Yeah, if you're going to do Veza. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, $1,000 stand.
Yeah. But that's they actually
I could buy some really great regular monitors for $1,000.
Yeah.
But I'm not. This is for people that have ridiculous needs.
Yeah. This is video production type levels of stuff, like Pixar stuff. Like
Yeah. It's like, hey, we're gonna charge you $5,000 for this monitor. We can't give you the stand though.
they're getting a lot of heat for this, and I can kind of see why they're getting ridiculed. But in a lot of those environments, they tend to have their own rigs for monitors. So a lot of the times they don't even need the stand. So it's like, if you want it, you can get it.
It's just the optics of having this all be on a public stream that anybody can watch. Announcing the stuff it's for, you know, render farms.
Yeah.
It's like
people have been waiting for that Mac Pro for
Like they could have saved themselves some trouble by having like a separate stream for the prosumers.
Yeah, they probably should have done that.
Like ended it at the end of talking about their OS updates and all that.
Yeah.
And then be like, okay, now for your prosumers, here's what's going on with new Mac Pros and this new monitor and yours are like AR and Swift tools for devs and all this other dev stuff.
Yeah.
It doesn't really matter to the general public. But they didn't, so,
so they're getting... They can get mocked. Right, so,
yeah.
They're still going to make a whole bunch of money.
Mm. Yep.
Oh, yeah. Mm. All right. And then, of course, there's that sign-in button that generates a fake email to forward to your real email.
Yeah, which we touched on briefly.
Yeah.
Good feature.
And yeah. And of course controller support.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
Yep.
Oh, good stuff. Okay. Yeah. Now for the penultimate story of the night. Magic the Gathering. We were all involved in that at one point or another.
Yeah. I think that's the question.
Either we were curious or either we were curious about it or we just fell headlong into it. And now Netflix has announced that they're actually producing a Magic the Gathering series with the Russo brothers as the executive producers.
I am completely okay with this.
Yep. Let's see. Henry Gilroy of Star Wars Rebels and Star Wars The Clone Wars, and Jose Molina of The Tick and Agent Carter will serve as lead writers and co-exec producers on the... Oh, they're calling this an anime series.
Yep.
An episode order and length of each installment is yet to be determined. But, yeah, Netflix will let the storytelling drive those decisions. So, all right, that could be interesting. Let's see. Octopi will oversee production of the series with Russo's group sort of overseeing as executive producers. Yoriaki Mochizuki will serve as supervising director and co-exec producer. Animation is being done by Bardell Entertainment of Teen Titans Go fame.
Mm-hmm.
And the big picture goal is to expand the series into a larger franchise featuring multiple series like Marvel's kind of suite of Netflix shows. And yeah, it's the first time Magic Gathering has been adapted for the screen after Fox planned to adapt it for the big screen in 2014.
And that didn't end up happening.
No.
Nope.
There's a lot of untapped potential here. It's like there's a whole lot of world building that has already been done.
There's a lot of stories they could draw from.
Yeah. So.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I'm into this.
Yes. Yes. Me too. see what they'll do with it. But anyway, and finally, we got a trailer for something that looks amazing.
Oh god.
Ad Astra.
Yeah.
I was reading this article a little bit more about the Magic the Gathering thing. The president of Wizards of the Coast, Chris Cox.
Yeah.
As in COCKS.
Yeah, that's unfortunate, but yes.
I'm sure that was not a great childhood.
Nope.
Yeah.
Nope.
Worse high school.
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But anyway, Ad Astra.
Yeah, this is the new Brad Pitt movie.
Yep.
Sci-fi thriller where he finds out... his father is involved in this mysterious stuff that threatens survival of the planet and the solar system. Yep. And he's being sent out to figure out what the fuck is going on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And yeah, this is going to be out September 20th. Looks pretty good.
Yeah. I hadn't even heard of it before.
They're trying to show like the most realistic example of what space travel looks like on film.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm expecting it to be lots and lots of void.
Lots of nothing.
That's fair.
Nothing. And, well, there's that whole psychiatric evaluation program that they have in there, too, which is kind of important.
Yeah, because your brain does weird stuff when you're out in space.
Yes.
Yeah.
Actually, everything does weird stuff when you're out in space.
Yeah, this looks really, really good. It's not based on a novel or anything, but...
Don't think it is.
It's not mentioned.
Yeah.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, it's interesting, because I don't know that Brad Pitt has been in too many sci-fi movies.
Well, he was in World War Z.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
which
was a train wreck, but that's...
Sorry. Yeah.
That's kind of post-apocalyptic.
Yeah.
It's
still genre, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think more sci-fi, like, space and future oriented kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he's more Nazis and whatever.
Yellow Nazis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there seems to be a tendency towards genre fiction these days. I think it's starting to shake a little bit of its stigma, so
yeah.
With how well stuff like MC.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway. So, yeah, that's the show we got, folks.
Oof, yes.
2.5 hours worth. Damn.
Yeah, well, anyway. Considering we probably might not have a show next week, we'll give you a good dose this week.
I was on the cusp of letting you guys know that I had a heart out at 9, but I guess that's not going to come up.
Nope.
So. Anyway, I would like to remind all of our listeners, if you've got a question, comment, something you want us to read on the air, you can get in contact with us. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We got it linked for you in the show notes. Also, on top of the soon-to-be-dead iTunes, you can catch our little bit of unscripted shenanigans at Apple Podcasts, Google Play, RSS, archive.org, pretty much any podcast aggregator or just any place where you can download casts like ours and enjoy them. So, with that, I have been your host with the most, Brandon Perkins. And for Felipe Donato, Patrick Mifflin, and Chris Elogi, later!